You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. A battle has raged for decades on the western edge of Los Angeles County. On the top of a hill, overlooking the populations of Chatsworth, Simi Valley, Canoga Park, sits the Santa Susana Field Lab. From 1948 until 2006, it was a nuclear testing site for America's space exploration programs, home to 10 nuclear reactors, 4 launch stands, thousands of tests of rocket engines. It also suffered a partial nuclear meltdown that released clouds of radiation into the surrounding area, a meltdown that was covered up.
The reactor was located 35 miles from downtown Los Angeles. It was called the Sodium Reactor Experiment, or SRE. But in 1959, when it suffered its fuel rod melting, the general public was not informed. Local public safety officials weren't told much either.
That is a young Warren Olney in 1979, who was then reporting for KNBC TV Channel 4. He broke the story about the meltdown that happened at Santa Susana and that people were told to keep it quiet and at the very least minimize what happened. Well, in the decades since, of course, Warren joined KCRW. And the arguments about how to clean up this contaminated site in the middle of a big city and who will pay have dragged on.
The Department of Energy, NASA, and Boeing have made repeated promises to clean up, as has the State Toxics Agency that oversees them. And those promises have been broken over and over again.
That's Daniel Hirsch, who heads up a nuclear policy group called the Committee to Bridge the Gap. He's one of many people featured in a documentary called In the Dark of the Valley, which chronicles the ongoing saga at Santa Susana. And joining us to talk about it is the director of the film, Nicholas Mim, as well as two people who star in the doc, Melissa Bumstead, who lives near the site, and KNBC Channel 4's current investigative reporter, Joel Grover, who's been reporting on this story off and on for the last 6 years. Hello to all three of you.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Nicholas, I want to start with you. How did you first learn about Santa Susana? What made you want to do this documentary in the first place? When did you hear this story?
My producing partners and I first stumbled upon this story in 2018. I think it was January or February of 2018 when we were hired by Change.org to do a 2 to 4 minute video for Melissa's petition. We quickly realized when we were making that little petition video that this story was much too large for 2 to 4 minutes. So we convinced Change.org to do a 7 minute video. And obviously that's still not enough time to fit this story in. So after we completed that project, we quite separately from Change.org decided to venture into the feature documentary world and started the journey from there.
Melissa, you've been fighting for this cleanup ever since your daughter Grace was diagnosed with an aggressive form of leukemia at age 4. If you wouldn't mind, talk about the connection that you believe exists between Santa Susana and the cancers in your community. These are cancers, by the way, among children, but also of adults as well.
When we first found out about Grace's diagnosis in 2014, we were told that there were no environmental links between pediatric cancers and contamination or really anything, that it was just a genetic fluke. And of course, you know, we don't question our doctors, and that seemed very reasonable. It wasn't until we started meeting other families at Children's Hospital Los Angeles that I started to question that. We met a family, Lauren Hammersley and her family, who are in the documentary. They live only probably 10 miles on the other side of the mountain. And then I met another family who lived 2 blocks over, and I met another family who was 2 blocks over and a little bit to the east. And finally, when I met another family who lived on our avenue, I started to panic because I knew that childhood cancer is extremely rare. There's only 15,000 new cases every year out of 72 million children in America. So the chance of knowing your neighbors, especially at an internationally renowned hospital like Children's Hospital Los Angeles, we knew something wasn't right. We mapped ourselves on Google Maps, and we all saw that we were in this big circle. Wasn't until about a year later that someone first said, that the Santa Susana Field Lab right there in the middle. Do you think it could be the contamination?
Did the other people who were involved in this, the other moms and dads and other family members who have a member who has one of these cancers, these rare cancers, as it were, did they know what they were living close to?
You know, I've lived within probably 20 miles of the Santa Susana Field Lab my whole life, but I didn't learn that it actually existed until my daughter's cancer. Nobody ever mentioned when I was 18 and I had a rare autoimmune disease called ITP, and I actually had a mutant spleen. I had three spleens. The doctor said they've never seen anything like that before. Nobody mentioned contamination or radioactive fallout or anything. When my mom had a brain tumor at age 40, they didn't say anything. When she grew up in the area and had tumors all over her gums that they had to take off when she was eight, nobody ever correlated the Santa Susana Field Lab and the health issues. And I think for a long time, everyone assumed it was just bad luck, that their family was unlucky. And for me, what really convinced me that this was absolutely a problem was when I learned about the epidemiological study by Dr. Hal Morgenstern that found out that residents living within 2 miles of the Santa Susana Field Lab actually had a 60% higher cancer incidence rate, and that over 1,500 workers have been diagnosed with cancer just from the Santa Susana Field Lab.
Have there, Melissa, been radiation readings taken in the populated areas around the West San Fernando Valley, like around your house, for example? Do you know what those radiation levels are? Are they higher than other places?
Well, they've done extensive studies on the field lab. When it comes off of the field lab, it gets a little trickier. The Los Angeles River, the headwaters of the Los Angeles River are at the Santa Susana Field Lab. And so every time that Boeing lets contamination from the field lab get into the water, they're often fined or they're actually not fined. The water board almost always lets them off. They have to account for that contamination. And so after the Woolsey fire, we saw things like lead 14 times above the legal level. We saw cyanide and arsenic and lead and mercury, all these dangerous heavy metals and different chemicals. So we know that these things are coming off the mountain into the community. Ours is not very static. It's very mobile contamination. It can blow into your yard one day and blow out the next day. But that, I think that's what's made this site so tricky, because some days it is hard to measure, you know, and it's no mistake that Boeing only takes the water runoff readings during the summer when there's no runoff. We see that consistently, that type of poor testing, things to minimize the danger. We even know, actually, from one of Boeing's own studies, they hid it in the footnotes. But according to their own data, certain parts of the lab are so contaminated that 96 out of 100 people would get cancer if they lived on the site and they grew produce and they ate it.
We reached out to Boeing, by the way, for comment on talking with you folks about this documentary and what it alleges, and they declined an interview with the documentary as well, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Joel, have you tried to talk to the folks at Boeing about this?
When you say they declined an interview, I have been trying for at least 6 years to sit down with Boeing and ask questions about Santa Susana and the contamination there, and they have always declined an interview. But let's not single out just Boeing. There's NASA. There's the U.S. Department of Energy. There's the Department of Toxic Substances Control, the state agency that's supposed to protect us from toxic substances. They do not want to answer reporters' questions. And, you know, Steve, I've been a reporter, an investigative reporter, for 30 years. And I have often noticed that if someone doesn't want to sit and answer your questions, maybe they have something to hide.
The Department of Energy and NASA signed a legal agreement, right, promising to clean up all this contamination to, what was it called, background levels?
Right. Background levels are the levels of radiation that naturally occur in the soil when nothing is there.
But again, it was supposed to be done by 2017. Here we are 4 years later.
Well, let's go back even before 2017. These agreements were signed in 2007. By Boeing, by NASA, by DOE. And I always found this interesting. It was a Republican governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger, whose administration got those agreements signed and whose administration really pushed for a full cleanup of Santa Susana. And subsequent administrations, governors, have let those agreements basically slide.
Isn't this legally binding? They were supposed to do this. It was a legal agreement to be done by 2017. We're in 2021. If I say I'm going to do something by a certain year and I sign my name to it, I have to do that. There are repercussions if I don't.
There are then ways that a government agency or private company can prolong the process, saying we need a new environmental impact statement. There's a lot of ways they can postpone a cleanup. And there are those that have said to me, the parties that should be cleaning this up are just trying to drag this out till no one remembers Santa Susana anymore. But people like Melissa say, wait a minute, we're not going to let people forget about this.
Governor Gavin Newsom appointed Jared Blumenfeld to head up Cal EPA in 2019. And, you know, in the movie, there was this feeling at the time that he could be the person who could really make a difference. He spoke out publicly about enforcing the agreement, about changing the culture at Toxic Substance Control, the DTSC. In your view, Melissa, has he gotten any closer to fulfilling any promises?
It's one of my biggest heartbreaks because I had so much hope and so much faith in Secretary Jared Blumenfeld. We don't know what politics are at play, but right now, as we speak, the Department of Toxic Substance Control and Boeing are in closed-door negotiations to completely gut the cleanup. We were having meetings with Blumenfeld regularly. We were having very productive meetings. And then all of a sudden, it was like he slammed the door in our face. In fact, there's not any community representative at all in these negotiations between the DTSC and Boeing. Ventura County Supervisor Linda Parks, who's been a great advocate for the cleanup, requested to send a representative to these meetings and was denied. And Congressman Sherman and Congresswoman Brownlee, they've been very proactive to try to make sure that the community doesn't get left out of this. And so now we're asking people in California to go above Blumenfeld and go straight to Governor Newsom and ask him to intervene to stop these negotiations, because Governor Newsom right now is probably the only person who could stop this negotiation and put the cleanup back on track.
You said, Melissa, that Blumenfeld was in discussions with Boeing to gut the cleanup agreement. How do you know that?
Boeing hasn't kept it secret that they've wanted to get out of the cleanup agreements. NASA and the Department of Energy have both, all three players have made it very public that they do not intend to keep their original cleanup agreements. NASA came out with their final environmental impact statement saying that they would leave up to 80% of the contamination on site permanently. When we met with California Senator Stern not too long ago, he told us that Boeing made it known to him that they were entering into confidential agreements with the DTSC. And because of that, we've tried to do several FOIA requests, try to get information for what these agreements might entail. And we've been blocked on every level because now these negotiations are considered private and protected. So to what degree they'll come out gutting the cleanup, we're not 100% sure, but we have a feeling it'll look very similar to their prior attempts, which have been to leave as much contamination as humanly possible. And then, just to add insult to injury, to turn it into a public park.
Again, we reached out to Boeing. Joel, you mentioned you've tried for years to get them to comment about this. We've also reached out to the U.S. Department of Energy and to NASA. They've all declined interviews with the documentary, but also with KCRW. You, again, have been covering the story for a long time, Joel. You know, you mention some suspicious relationships between the responsible parties and the state agencies that are meant to regulate them. Expound on that, if you wouldn't mind. Talk about some of, you know, the coziness that goes on.
From my years of reporting on this, there is a documented history of a lot going on behind closed doors, including Boeing, I believe, to stop a full cleanup of Santa Susana. I remember in 2015, I interviewed Jared Blumenfeld's predecessor, Linda Adams, who was the California EPA chief under Schwarzenegger. And I remember her telling me she called for a meeting with Boeing to discuss how to reach agreement to get a full cleanup of Santa Susana. And she said when she had that meeting, the room was full of, quote, an army of Boeing lobbyists that she felt was meant to put pressure on her, the head of the California EPA. I remember Sheila Kuehl, who is now an LA County supervisor, but was in the state Senate pushing for a full cleanup of Santa Susana. I remember Sheila Kuehl telling me whenever she had meetings about this, she would be surrounded by Boeing lobbyists pushing for less than a full cleanup. So from the politicians who have pushed for a comprehensive cleanup, they've always told me that they face a lot of pressure from Boeing and other parties to scuttle a full cleanup.
Nicholas, if you had those folks in a room, what is it you want to ask them? What kind of story can they tell, do you think, to set the record straight, if the record's not straight?
I'll reiterate what we say in the film through title card, is that we did reach out to all these entities as well. Some of them did respond to us and politely declined, and Boeing was the only one who just didn't respond to us at all. And it would be great to get them in the room, because I think what we really want to understand is what the delay is and what their end goal is. Because, you know, with it's been weird to me throughout these last few years making this documentary, seeing the discrepancies and the inconsistencies. Yeah, in the film, we have the former Secretary of Energy, Rick Perry, talking about how the Department of Energy, found less contamination in further studies and therefore needed to adjust their cleanup standards. But you have a 2019 Inspector General's report issued by NASA that says, you know, in plain English, we've actually found more contamination. So I guess with that being said, like, if I got these people in a room, I would love to just ask them about those discrepancies.
Well, the old line about journalism is sunlight is the best disinfectant, right? And I guess it's no coincidence, Nicholas Mim, that you titled your documentary In the Dark of the Valley, which, by the way, can be streamed on Hulu. It'll also air again on MSNBC this weekend on Sunday at 5 o'clock Pacific time. Melissa Bumstead, parent and activist, and Joel Grover, investigative journalist over at KNBC Channel 4. Thanks to you all for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, what happened decades ago wouldn't have come to light as it did without the help of one Warren Olney. In the late 1970s, Warren was working as an investigative reporter at Channel 4 before eventually coming to KCRW. His Unit 4 team in 1979 broke the story about Santa Susana and the meltdown that happened there that few people knew about. And now, Warren, of course, hosts KCRW's To The Point and To The Point's climate change podcasts, and he's here with us right now. Hey, Warren.
Hi, Steve.
What tipped you off to the story in 79? What was it, someone who lived nearby? Did you get a phone call?
Absolutely not. Nobody who lived nearby knew anything about it. I got it from a group that was working at UCLA, principally led by Dan Hirsch, who has stayed with it ever since, all these 40 years that have expired since then. Nobody had ever heard of a nuclear meltdown in the United States until Three Mile Island had occurred. Dan Hirsch's group of students discovered that there's something had happened in Santa Susana in 1959, 20 years earlier. They gave it to us, and as a result, we got a video from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they don't give out these videos anymore after what we did with them, showing that there had been a meltdown in Santa Susana, that they had jacked the reactor up before they did anything else, caused it to be even worse than it was. We did this story. We had extraordinary footage showing the bottom of the reactor core. They had to design new equipment with cameras on the ends of long tubes because of the danger of the radioactive material. And they went down inside, and you could see the broken fuel rods at the bottom of the reactor containment vessel. And we had we didn't know what we were looking at. We had we hired a couple of GE nuclear engineers who had defected from GE because they thought the technology was too dangerous. And they told us on camera that what we were looking at is probably exactly what it looked like at the bottom of Three Mile Island. So it was a pretty shocking story and took everybody by surprise.
Three Mile Island had just happened, right? Just a couple of months before what you discovered had happened at Santa Susana 20 years before. How did you follow up, Warren? Did you reach out to the people who owned this place? Wasn't it Rocketdyne before Boeing?
Even before Rocketdyne, it was owned by Atomics International. They were the ones that had it in 1979, and they were the ones who had it in 1959. We talked to them. They lied to us on camera and said that there had not been any widespread dissemination of nuclear fallout as a result. It turned out that, in fact, they had to open the doors. There was so much nuclear exposure inside the building, they had to open the doors to get rid of it. The result of which is that it was in 1979, and still is until this day, nuclear fallout all over the ground in that area. And in fact, that's where the Woolsey fire actually began. There is evidence that in the smoke from the Woolsey fire, nuclear material was very likely disseminated around the Los Angeles basin.
Hundreds of thousands of people, Warren, live in this area. You know, we're talking about the West San Fernando Valley, but also all the way into Ventura County, right?
That's correct, and very much in the Simi Valley. It's kind of interesting. One of the things we had was it all going all the way back to 1959, just a little prior to the meltdown. There was an Edward R. Murrow documentary about it, and they actually used the reactor to light the entire city of Moorpark and provide it with electricity. It was experimental, and they were showing how it could be used. So all of that area is affected by it. It's a very wide area, and as you said, when the wind blows, it certainly would carry stuff into Ventura County.
In the years after the revelations, Warren, how did it change your reporting about nuclear energy?
Well, I did a lot of reporting about nuclear energy as a result of that. And one of the places I went to, for example, was Hanford, Washington, where the Nagasaki bomb was manufactured. It's now the most serious Superfund site in the United States. We went up there in the late 70s, early 80s. It's right on the Columbia River. There's an enormous amount of material stored in giant containers up there. There's concern that it might melt through the containers that it's being held in and leak into the Columbia River. And in fact, at one point, they did directly dump nuclear material into the Columbia River, which means, of course, that it can flow down. And it's the source of water for millions of people between there and the Pacific Ocean. But we found they were so proud at the time of the fact that they had manufactured the Nagasaki bomb that we went to the high school football field, and the helmets of the kids that were playing football all had little mushroom clouds on them.
Warren Olney, who hosts KCRW's To The Point podcast. Warren, it's nice to have you on the air with us. Thank you so much.
Great to be there, Steve. Thank you for calling.
Again, we reached out to Boeing, NASA, the Department of Energy, Cal EPA, and the State Department of Toxic Substances Control. All of them declined to answer questions on air. Some, however, provided statements. NASA says it, quote, remains firmly committed to achieving a cleanup, one that is, quote, protective of public health and the environment. Boeing says, quote, the transformation of Boeing's land at Santa Susana from a field lab to open space is well underway, and the work will be one of their, quote, largest environmental investments. We have their full statements, and we'll have it on our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA. Grab the podcast while you're there, too, and check it out. That is it for us today. Tomorrow, our performance artist took to needle and thread in the wake of the pandemic. Now she's doing a show about it on the East Coast. Catherine Barnes, Phil Richards, Amy Todd, Danielle Chiriguayo, Sue Margulies, and Christian Bordahl all helped make the show happen this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your time and for your ears tonight. Have a great night.